Welcome to the Playing Injured podcast, where we have conversations that help people turn their adversity into their advantage. Welcome to another episode of Playing Injured. Really pumped for today's episode. I think it'll be high energy, value packed, everything all in one. I'm sitting here with a lifestyle business mentor. He's also a high performance life coach. He's a TEDx speaker, and that TEDx speech was amazing. And he's also an author. I'm sitting here with Di Manuel. How you doing today, man?
Doing great, Josh. Thank you, first of all, for just the opportunity to be here. And listen, man, I love your energy, dude. Like it is great to see, you know, and but it's also like we were talking before you hit record and your energy didn't change.
Right.
And that's what I love, because I've been on some podcasts where, you know, you meet them beforehand and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, and then they turn on the mic and they hit record and then it's like, dude, you are like legit. And I love that. I love that. And I just want to say thank you. So it's, I know we're gonna have a great conversation. So game on, you know?
Totally. I've been in those situations too. And it's tough. You know, you want to be genuine and you want to have a genuine conversation. And that's what I want to bring to people when, you know, energy is contagious. So it's all you. I'm just feeding off you, right?
Well, it's going back and forth. That's perfect. Game on.
So that's great. Kind of want to get into what you do today and how you spend your time today. To give the folks a little bit of an idea who you are.
Sure. Well, okay. You know, I'm 44 now, and still, I'm like 44. Holy crap! What happened? You know, like you mentioned that you're in your mid 20s, right? And I'm like, I remember my mid 20s, kinda. You know, like, it's so long ago. But the interesting thing to note, Josh, is I have an 18 and a 16 year old, right? So it's like, my 18 year old's closer to your age than I am. So I love it though. I love it because it's just those different perspectives that really can bring us all closer together and help us all learn. And
100%. You
know, I didn't always think that way though. And I want to be very clear on that, you know, so sort of things have sort of changed. You know, I in my teens, I was morbidly obese. I know we'll get to that in a second. And you know, I sort of learned really good, really well how to change my exterior. You know, I learned how to exercise, how to become fit, how to become healthy, at least on the external. On the inside, I really didn't do any work. No real personal development, you know? It was only literally, pardon the cliche or pun here, but it was only skin deep, you know? Like I became very good at just working on whatever everybody else sees. And that led to complications when I got into my 20s and into my early 30s. Like during that time, I was building a company with a business partner, and I loved it. I enjoyed it. I was selling fitness equipment, accessories, supplements, apparel, you know, really just health equipment all across Canada on e-com, but also some retail stores. And I loved it. I learned a lot doing that. I did it for 17 years. Okay. So all my 20s and a good chunk of my 30s was spent doing that. But here's the thing. I learned that all that stress, that overwhelm, the challenges that I would face, it created a certain amount of stress in my life. And I learned in my 20s and my 30s that the best way to manage that wasn't necessarily the healthiest way. And so I started to abuse alcohol and some substances, you know, and that was how I coped, and I numbed myself and would escape in the moment some of that overwhelm.
Yeah.
Then there were some transitions that I went through. That's the basis of the TED talk, actually, because I talk a bit about that, this thing that happened to me 11 years ago, and that changed everything. And so if I look at the last decade, I've had a lot of internal growth as well as external growth. Okay. Like I've been very focused on what I say yes to and what I say no to. And I've been saying yes to myself a lot. I ended up leaving my career of 17 years. My wife quit her career. We pulled the kids out of school, gave away all our stuff, and just started traveling. And people are like, whoa, that's pretty crazy. And I'm like, yeah, it was pretty crazy. You know, we're now back home in Vancouver, but we were away for like 5 years, you know, and 2.5 years in Bali, Indonesia. And I left that company, but I had some stuff I was doing on the side that were passion projects and things I was interested in, like coaching and supporting people, but in the lifestyle where I was always doing it on the business side, but now I want to do it more on the life side. And so that became more of the focus. And I became a very, very committed to content creation and creating content that it helps people enrich their lives, you know, their mindsets, their belief systems, just giving them great information to get out of their own way and create the life they want. And in going through that process, you know, this last 5 years, I've just been growing and learning. And I had a lot of time with family, my kids, just getting time around them because I work from home. We've been digital nomads for a good chunk of that. So that is what's been real for me as of late. And then, you know, that's just a snapshot of my last, you know, 20 some odd years. But I know we'll get into more details, but that's me in a nutshell, you know?
Yeah. And it sounds super fun and super interesting being able going from, hey, you've had multiple changes in your life. Then you want to go traveling. You want to do all these different things and enjoy time with family. It must be tough to juggle all those things, right? But you help people with that, and you do it through the five F's. Talk a little bit about that. I think a lot of people struggle with prioritizing their life, keeping it simple, and just focusing on the things that truly matter. How have you done that? And talk a little bit about the five F's.
Well, thanks for the question. You know, I really enjoy writing. Okay. I always loved that. But then I got into fitness and I got into business. And so the writing sort of went to the wayside until I discovered blogging about 13, 14 years ago. So I got back into, like I said, creating content, especially written word content and articles, and just, I really enjoyed that. So that was just something I would always do on the side for my own self-care, my own, just really gave me a good sense of being, like, just made me feel proud, right? Fulfilled to be able to create 100%. That information. During that process, you know, I've been supporting and helping and coaching people, and you know, we all struggle with very similar things.
Yeah.
You know, like I asked, you know, this, you're a very fit individual, Josh. And I know you have a very specific way that you embrace your fitness. You celebrate your fitness, but you know, it takes work. It takes some effort to make health a priority. It's a decision and you follow it with certain actions. Well, I find that, and I'm included in this challenge, is the time element, right? Like, how do we leverage our time? How do we do the right things for the right reasons to produce the right results? And gosh, I feel for everybody. Like, even when I started making my lifestyle changes, there was no Google. Okay. Today we have Google and we have search engines. We have YouTube. We have so much information. It can get really, really challenging to figure out what is right for me. And that was sort of what inspired me to write the book, The Whole Life Fitness Manifesto. And it was because I saw people struggling with what to do and how to do it, and especially why are they doing it? And the book is set up in a way to just teach people a 28-day process, like where if you can give yourself 30 minutes a day, every day for 28 days, I give you the exact play-by-play what to do with that 30 minutes. In that 28 days, massive shifts happen, big changes, you know, physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically. Like, there's lots of these subtle changes that start to happen, but it takes consistency. And I provide a framework called the five F's. And please recognize that these are my F's, what I find makes sense for my life. Now, other people out there might have a different representation, because I want you to envision your life like a home, like a house. Now, think back to when you're in grade school and you got the crayons and the paper out and you're drawing a house. How do we draw it? We go wall, 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 right? Like a floor. And then we do the little triangle roof, right?
Right.
So think about that house. You've got four walls and a roof. Well, the four walls for me, I use F's. Fitness, faith, finances, family. I've got a foundation, which is health. The roof, which is overarching everything, fun.
Fun.
So, okay. Like, so for me, you know, family is important. It is one of my pillars. I know that when I'm living in alignment with my values, I've got time with family. I prioritize that time. I have connection with them and friends, you know? So that's very important to me, that relationship I have with those people. Yeah. Finances. I know I have to be financially responsible, you know, because how many people are strained, and me included? I remember back in the day being way over leveraged, and the amount of stress and anxiety that I had in my life because of that. And so getting finances in a good place, because we live in a global economy. You know, we need, unfortunately, to have money. I wish we were all in a barter system. That'd be awesome. But yeah, we're not, you know, at least not yet. Maybe with crypto, we'll get there. But for now, you know, getting your finances in order, pretty important. It's we need it.
Yeah.
Faith. My faith, I'm going to be non-denominational. I won't talk about religion. But when I say faith, it shouldn't have a denomination automatically attached to it. Because a lot of us do. We hear faith and we automatically think religion. I'm talking about this sense of purpose. Like, I'm on this planet for a reason. And I have faith that whatever that reason is, I want to leave this planet better than it was when I got here. So for me, that's the faith wall, the pillar. And then we've got fitness. People come to me, they're like, how do I get healthier? I'm like, start moving your body. You know, like, just easily start moving your body, like, start walking every day. You know, like, that's a great place to begin. And they're like, well, don't I have to go to the gym and get on the elliptical for an hour? And I'm like, no. I mean, that's a great option. I'm not going to say don't do that, but it's not like you have to do that. There's so many things you can do, but fitness is a direct tie to that foundation of health.
Yeah.
You know, how do you get healthier? It is one way that we know works instantly. You start moving your body regularly and you do that for day after day after day, you get healthier. Okay. 100%. I am not 100%. Making up anything here. Like, you know, people would say, no, you're wrong. If I move my body every day, I'm going to get more unhealthy. I'm like, where are you exercising? You know, like, are you, you know, like, there's something wrong there. And then the fun, if, man, Josh, if you're not smiling every day, what's going on? Why not? You know?
Wow.
And so that is the 5S. And so it's basically, I'm using like a metaphor of this home, which is our life.
Yeah.
And you know, so whatever your walls are, figure that out. Your core values, what matters most to you? Maybe it's similar to mine. That's great. But those were mine. And but I share them as an example, and I invite others, get clarity on what are you're going to build a life for yourself, which we all are. We're all our own architects, designing the life that we want. Be very intentional. Where are you going to prioritize your time and your energy?
Yeah.
You know? So that's it. And thanks for asking me that question, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because you're juggling a lot of different things. You're traveling, you're doing a lot. And so to make it simple, but hey, how do you find time to do all this? Well, by just aligning my schedule with my values.
You're right. Absolutely. And it's commitment management, not time management. And that's the biggest thing I want people to understand. Like, I commit blocks of time to the things that are important to me, my family, and my values. You know, and that's it. There's a great book by Greg McKeown called Essentialism. And I highly recommend people read that. He's a Silicon Valley guy. He's had lots of successful businesses, but he wrote this book a number of years ago. And he actually does a great interview with Tim Ferriss. And so if you don't want to read the book, just listen to the Tim Ferriss interview. It's a couple hours long. You'll get everything that's in the book. But it's really about helping you find clarity in what's essential in your life versus what's non-essential. But being very, very clear that there's no more gray area. Do you know what I mean? Like, how many times do we find ourselves, oh, maybe, you know, we get presented with an opportunity. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Like, we're afraid to say no, right? Yeah. I was afraid to say no.
You're right.
And that made me feel anxious and had this negative energy to it. So I didn't feel good about myself, you know, and all of a sudden I'd have all these maybes out there and I felt like I wasn't saying yes to anything because now I had too many maybes out there, you know?
Right.
And so getting clear on what to say yes to and what's an absolute no will help you. It helps things become simpler. And that way you can prioritize the things that actually matter.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my thought on that one.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I agree with that so much because it is tough to say no to things, right? Yes. But when you say no to things, you say yes to what you want to do. And when you say yes to something, you say no to anything else. And I'm reading Atomic Habits right now by James Clear. Amazing book. And he said, no is a choice. Yes is a responsibility.
That's right.
So
it is. And no is a complete sentence, right?
Yeah.
Like, no, no. Like, you do not have to give an explanation.
Yeah.
And realize this, I am Canadian. And so normally when I say no, I always want to apologize. I'm like, no, and I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry, but I'm a no. You know, but I shouldn't have to do that. It's just the Canadian DNA in me, right? Like we're so quick to say we're sorry. And for the littlest of things, it's so silly. But, you know, you don't have to apologize for saying no. And I want to give everybody permission that that no is a complete sentence. And there's nothing wrong with saying no. Nothing wrong with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So let's go back to your childhood and growing up and the struggles that you went through, right? Like I told you before, I said, I can relate to you. Your story really resonated with me because I'm like, man, I can relate to you. But I think first of all, you're in Canada. I know here in America, millions of people can relate to your story.
Sure.
I know it's probably very similar in Canada, right? And it's tough. So we'd love to hear.
Well, thanks, Josh. Yeah. So similarly, you know, I know that you had similar lifestyle habits as I did growing up. And you know, it wasn't my parents' fault. Okay. Like, and I always like to let people know that, like, I had a great upbringing. Like, my parents were there. My parents separated and divorced when I was pretty young. You know, I wasn't even 10 yet. And so that created some emotional strain. And you know, it's never easy, even though today it's more common to have people separating than it is getting married, which is scary. Yeah. It's scary. But you know, you can imagine when I was growing up, like there was one other kid in the class that had parents that had separated. Like, so that's how weird it was. 30 kids in the class. There's me and one other family that was dealing with that. So it wasn't like I had people to connect with and talk to. Mm-hmm. And so I started to console a lot of those emotions with food. Like I really did. I started playing a lot of video games. And so getting that dopamine, right? That little feedback from playing video games, watching movies. And I started eating a lot of different types of foods. Like, and I like to let people know this. So let me qualify the food for you. I was eating lots of food and lots of food that was very low in nutritional content, but very high in calories. Okay. Yeah. So this is the conundrum about obesity and what we face out there. There's a lot of people out there that are overweight, and we hear this and people are always like, when I tell them this, they're like, what? But I'm like, most people that are in that state of unhealth are actually starving to death. Mm. And people are like, what? What do you mean starving to death? And I'm like, because they're not getting nutrition. Like, it's not like they're eating, you know what? I'm going to go to a salad bar and I'm going to eat all the salad I can eat. You know, it's the types of foods that we're eating and they're often quite poor in nutrition value. So that creates an imbalance within us, you know, especially in our blood. And when it comes to nutrition, when you look at our minerals, our vitamins, like the importance building blocks,
right,
we're not getting enough of it. And so our body, our mind's saying, keep eating. You got to keep eating more because I need the nutrition to get this body working right. You know, so we want to eat more. And so it's just an interesting dynamic when you really look at it and why people are always hungry. It's because you're not getting the nutrition value. Like, that's why I say eat a big bowl of salad. I don't care. Try to overeat on a salad. You get to a point you're like, dude, I can't eat anymore. And you're full for a long time because it takes a while for the body to digest it and process it. And you get all that nutrition. So anyways, that's a little sign. Let me get off the fitness.
But that's good. That's great to know. That's great for people to hear, though. Seriously.
But I wanted to bring that up because I didn't know this at the time. And so at the time, here I am eating and eating and eating all these different types of foods, not very much nutrition value to it. And all of a sudden, never finding like I was ever full. I was always wanting to eat more. And so, you know, you're playing video games, watching movies, doing that, like not moving my body. Over a period of 5 years, I ballooned. Okay. And this is not me saying this. And I remember being at the doctor's office one day, doctor pulling my mom aside and saying, Betty Ann, diet is morbidly obese. Now, at this point at 14 years old, I didn't know what morbidly meant, nor did I know what obese meant. I had no idea. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
But I knew it wasn't good because he did pull my mom out of the office to say that to her. Mm. So then I started to really become self-conscious. Like I was already self-conscious, but now I was like, oh boy, you know, this asthma I'm dealing with, my sore knees and joints, the poor sleep patterns, gosh, all this is because of this lifestyle I was living. And it was a hard place to be because I'm like, geez, I really don't like who I am. And I don't have anybody to express these negative emotions and thoughts I feel very alone. And so my only coping mechanism was more food.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that's why it feels like a really hard place to be. And that's why I really feel for anybody that's feeling this way right now. It's because we feel very alone. we feel like we can't tell anybody how we're feeling. And that's awful, you know, especially as a kid, anybody, you know, kids aside, it's hard for anyone. And so I remember getting to this point in my life where I was at my dad's place visiting. You know, we would see him every other weekend, and my brother and I, my brother, a couple of years younger than me, we'd go to my dad's for, you know, Friday, Saturday night and spend Sunday with him. And my dad, you know, being the kind of guy that he was, he just always wanted to make us happy.
Yeah.
And so as a dad, you know, he would have his cupboards filled with junk food, you know, like chocolate bars and ice cream, and we'd have pizza. Like it was, you know, it was great. But I know he was just doing his best, but this was unfortunately just continuing to add to the problem, right?
Like 100%.
But he was doing, he was honestly doing what he felt was best. And again, that's why I don't begrudge him at all. And it took me a while to realize this, like, just so you know, like, Josh, I'll be honest with you and people that are listening and watching this. Like, I was very quick to point fingers at everybody else except myself for why I was like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it took me a while to let go of that, you know, to realize that, you know what, it's nobody else's fault. It's me that's eating this food. It's me that's not moving. It's me that's playing the video games. Like, nobody was ever making me do any of that stuff.
Yep.
You know? And so I had to get to that place for the changes to start to happen, because up to that point I was the victim. I wasn't going to be a champion of change, you know?
Right.
And I remember this day at my dad's place. I was in having a shower, and my dad was rushing me to hurry it up. Normally I was famous for having really long showers, putting the water on very hot, because if I did that, it would create so much steam in the bathroom and condensation that when I would get out of the shower, the mirror would be covered. So I wouldn't have to look at my reflection. Like, that is where I was mentally. I was 14 years old and I hated looking at myself. Hated it. There's like two photos of me in that period of my life. Two, one of which I share on my website just to show people that's actually who I was, you know, like, 'cause people still, they meet me today and they're like, yeah, right. Whatever, you know, like, they just don't believe it, because I've been living my life since that point with health in mind, you know, certain lifestyle habits. Yeah. And so here I was getting out of the shower and the mirror, I could see my reflection, and I don't know why, but I'm toweling off and I can see other peripheral. I can see my outline, my silhouette. Right. And so I turn, I lock eyes on myself. And it was at this point, I just lost it, Josh. Like, I could totally lost it. Like, I broke down, you know, ugly crying. Like, I'm ugly crying, like sobbing and just thinking all these awful thoughts about who I was and who that person was I was looking at in the mirror. And thoughts were flashing through my mind. Like, man, it would just so much easier if I didn't have to deal with this. You know, if I just wasn't here anymore. And, you know, this all happened pretty quick. And it's funny, people say, man, it sounds like you were in the bathroom for hours. And I was like, no, this all happened fairly quickly, right? Because my dad was still trying to rush me to get out. And so here I am, and I get to this point where all of a sudden I start thinking about, wow, I really don't want to end it. I want to be here. My family loves me. My friends love me. You know, like, I like being alive. I don't want to not be here, you know? And so what do I do? Well, I actually got really honest. And this is what I invite everybody. Like, if you're starting to feel like there's something that you want to change, there's something that's limiting your amount of happiness or joy or fulfillment in your life, there's something holding you back, then there's probably something that needs to be changed, or something that you deep down want to change. And so when you get to that place, ask yourself, you know, if I don't make the change and I keep living life the way I'm living it right now, where do I actually feel I'll be 2, 3, 5 years from now?
Wow.
And so all of a sudden I started thinking, you know, this is who I am right now. This is as good as life's going to get. Because if I keep doing what I'm doing 5 years from now, it ain't going to be better than I am right now. I'll probably be another 100 pounds heavier, a lot more unhealthy, a lot more depressed. You know, like, I had that realization. So all of a sudden I'm like, okay, well, if I don't want that to be my future, I got to start doing things differently. To sum it up, I got to a place where I was more afraid of not changing than I was of changing.
And changing is tough.
It is tough, but I was, and that's scary, right? Change is scary because we just don't know. We don't know. There's the fear of the unknown. There's the fear of failure. There's the fear of success. There's lots of fears. Fears are real, man. They're real, you know, like they're there, but a lot of them aren't real. You know, they're just made up in our head. 100%. And we make up different situations and stories and we validate our fears, right? We're like, oh, it's okay. We give ourselves permission to let ourselves off the hook before we even try it. And I'm guilty of this. Like, trust me, this is just me being honest. You know, like I'm not someone that's got all the answers. I still struggle with this stuff too, but it doesn't mean I stop trying to embrace the change when I know I want to do it and I know it's important for me. And so here I was at that age and I realized that, you know what, the only way I'm going to change is if I start doing things differently. And I knew that if I started moving my body, started exercising, and I changed how I was eating, I knew that things are going to change. They got to get better. And I was very fortunate. I came out of that bathroom. I got my clothes on, went and found my dad in the living room. And I said to my dad, "Dad, I don't want to be this way anymore. I don't want to be fat. I don't want to be unhealthy. I want to be fit. I don't want to be like this anymore." 100%. And I said, "Can I get a bike?" Like I asked for a mountain bike because I was like, I knew I used to like riding my bike when I was younger. And I was like, I do not want to go to a gym. I don't want a personal trainer. I don't want to go to classes. I want to work out by myself. I don't want anybody to see me. And so I knew that a bike was something accessible. I could do it. And I could do it on my terms.
Yeah.
And this is the beautiful thing. This is why I was saying my parents were very supportive. He was like, sure. We went to the bike store, got me a bike that day, that afternoon. Wow. And that next day I just started cycling. Went out every day and went for a bike ride. And I went to the library, got books out on fitness and nutrition. And you're probably laughing because Josh, you just go to the Google. I'm older than Google. You know, my kids always laugh. They're like, why didn't you just Google it, Dad? I'm like, dude, there was no Google when I was going through this, you know, like I'm an 80s kid. Right. So, I had to work on educating myself on ways to get healthy. So this all happened and it took 20 months. People are like, wow, how quickly did you get healthy? And I'm like, well, I started getting healthier right away. But for me to really get to a point where it became automatic and subconscious, like this is just my lifestyle now, was 20 months, yeah. 20 months, over a year and a half of me just being consistent, moving my body, nourishing myself with lots of intention to be healthy. And that's what it took. But man, it changed everything. My entire life changed because of that one decision in front of that mirror at 14 years old.
And that's so amazing. And it's a decision. And that's what it starts with, right?
Yeah.
And so, man, I can relate to you so much because I remember just coming home and eating ice cream, like coming home from school and eating ice cream.
Yeah.
And I would do crazy stuff like put sugar on the ice cream. And
that's like, awesome. It's just,
we had, you know, microwavable, like buffalo wings and just like you mentioned, you don't realize that you're coping with something. You're just, you know, eating. You don't know, especially at that age when your awareness is low. Right.
Yeah.
But I do remember every birthday, every Christmas asking my dad for some type of fitness equipment.
That's
nothing
awesome.
Else. Some type of fitness equipment. That's what made me happy.
That's
right.
Cool.
Some type of fitness equipment. And it was very similar to how you felt of, I just want to be better.
Yeah.
And to this day, I'm still conscious about it. I'm pretty sure you're the same way now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's probably one of you'll never be obese ever again, no matter what.
No, there's no same way. Way. No way.
No way.
Like it's just, but again, things become, and this is what I tell people, you know, you get to a point where it just becomes your lifestyle. Right?
Yeah.
Like it's just, this is just
automatic.
Yeah. You don't think about it. You are that person. You're just being. And a lot of people say, well, how long does it take to get to that? And I'm like, I don't know. Like we're all different. And I know people start to say, oh, you got a new habit, 21 days, or you might read somewhere where they say 45 days. And then there's another one.
Or 90 days.
8 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all these different numbers. And all I got to say is, however long it takes. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about the destination. Make a commitment to yourself that you want to achieve something and you know it's going to involve you doing things differently. Just commit to the thing of doing it and do it regularly. And just don't worry about the outcome because whatever will happen as long as you trust the process. And that was, I had to get to that point because initially, I mean, I'll be honest, like I wanted results right away. Of course I did.
Yeah.
I'm a kid, I'm impatient. I'm like, I want this now, but I realized that it wasn't going to happen right away, but I could notice changes gradually. You know, my clothes started to fit a little bit looser. I started to realize that, wow, I used to be huffing and puffing going up this hill where I can get to the top of it and keep going. I didn't have to stop, you know? And so I started seeing differences. Also, I had my classes on the third floor of our high school. So I had to walk up three flights of stairs every day to get to class, you know? And I remember walking up those flights and being like sweating and huffing and puffing at the top. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, that was easy. I could run up these stairs, you know? Right. Like, so you start to see these little small changes, these little tiny wins. And those are the things worth celebrating. Recognize that, because that's proof that what you're doing is creating a shift, a change. And we have to acknowledge that. We have to recognize it. We have to celebrate it, you know, celebrate ourselves. And that's not always easy, but it's so worthwhile. And that's the one thing I always like to encourage people. Don't worry about where you're trying to get to. Just enjoy every little step, every little opportunity to do that little thing that you know is going to create massive shift for you long term.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, right. Anyways, that's sort of what I think about that. You know?
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Because you're so focused on the end process that you don't think it's a win until you get there.
Yes.
But it's a win. Yes. It's small wins along the way that build momentum.
There's lots of them too, right? There's lots of them, like so many of them. And I was never into sports because I sort of missed that opportunity. I used to be the guy that would get my mom to sign a note saying that I wouldn't have to participate in phys ed class because I didn't want to change in front of my peers. I didn't want to go in a change room. There's no way. Like I remember doing that once and just the ridicule, the teasing. And I was like, gosh, I never want to do this again.
Man,
you know, and so every excuse not to do phys ed, I did. You know, and so I never really played team sports. And that's why I always ended up doing individual sports, you know, for pretty much my whole life, you know, like martial arts, rock climbing, boxing, cycling, golf, you know, like all these, even CrossFit, you know, CrossFit might even be group, but it was still individual based, right? Like I never really got into the team side of things either. And so I was just gravitated to individual things. So I never played sports. I kind of feel remiss about that. You know, I didn't never get into team sports because I think it's such a wonderful way to build community and friendships. And I have friends that have played professionally as well as amateur levels and just those relationships that they fostered, you know, I was always so impressed by. And that's why I like to let people know if you're looking to make a change, well, get around people, get on a team. Like what a great way to just have a cheering committee right there to help you and support you. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah. 100%. It seems like for humans, it seems like we're more accountable to others than we are to ourselves. And that's what a team, that's why a team is so important. Right. So, man, you worked hard on the outer, like we said before, the perception. And that's what we focus on, right? That's what looks good on TV and online.
Yeah.
And in most ways, it is important. Your perception and how you look is great first impressions. It is important. But if you neglect what's inside or behind that perception, do they match?
That's right.
Do they come together, right? And it can be tough. I think a lot of people, you know, they're just focused on the perception. They work really hard on the perception, what the marketing, their brand looks like. But who are they as people, right? Talk about that a little bit. You know, really focusing on the perception, but not doing the inner work and how that affected you.
Well, yeah. This is sensitive. And when I say sensitive, let's put it this way. It's raw and real for me. You know, like those memories are pretty, I realized I was a very different person then. And I've changed a lot since then, you know, a lot. These last 11 years, it's been just growth, growth, growth. But I remember, especially in my early 20s, I'd become so good at working on the exterior and what people perceived.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a deep connection with who I was and what was important to me. Mm-hmm. It was just really ego driven. A lot of my decisions, everything that I was deciding to do was like, how will people perceive me if I do this? If I get a different career or I get a, you know, higher paying opportunity or I, you know, get a new vehicle, like it was just always about what do others think about me? And this was hard because I just felt I could never satisfy it. Right. Like it was always another thing, another accolade I was chasing. Yeah. And this stress and anxiety that I would feel because of this, I didn't know how to deal with it very well. And I learned early on in my 20s that, well, what a great way to burn off steam. I'll go for drinks with my buddies.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go to the club, whatever. We'll, you know, like go to the local pub and just hang out, watch USC and drink a bunch of drinks, you know, go play golf. And yeah, we'll just rush through the 18 just so we can party on the 19th, you know, and like just these habits. And even though I met my wife, we started having kids in our early to mid 20s, you know, and yet I still had these certain elements, this internal war, if you will, this battle that was going on for me inside. And my drinking became more and more and more regular. Like it was just my way at the end of the day for chilling out, relaxing, turning off my mind, numbing the stress and the overwhelm of my life or my discontent, let's just say, of where things were at and who I was. And this just kept compounding in a not a very good way. And it was affecting some of my relationships. It was affecting my family life. And you can imagine, so go back to those 5S. Remember, family is one of my pillars. It's very important to me.
Yeah.
Relationships with friends and family. And all of a sudden, I started realizing I was saying one thing, but doing something very different. Psychologists often refer to this like cognitive dissonance, right? Like this idea of this emotional disconnect we get when we're not really aligned with our values and we're living outside of those values. And because it creates this internal war. And I just was very good at sort of pushing it aside and, oh, just have a couple more drinks. It'll be good, you know, and then we'll be good. I'll worry about it later. And that was my pattern until my wife basically said to me one morning, you know, after I don't remember how I got home, and I won't talk about the whole story because it's in my TEDx talk. And, but
we want people to watch it.
I'd like them to watch it because they'll get the full idea of the story and what led up to this. But I'll give you the summary it was my wife and I were having a conversation about us separating, you know, about me leaving the home because my kids, who were both under the age of 6 at the time, I have two girls, my daughters, and I was not creating an environment that was good for them to be brought up in. And she knew it. And to be honest, I knew it too. And we got to a point and this conversation kept going on. Tears are being shared by both of us. Like it's a really hard moment. Cause at this point we were together for almost 10 years already. And, you know, to say, you know, we're going to split and go our separate ways. Like it didn't feel good for either of us, but we could both agree that it was probably the best option.
Right.
But we got to a point in the conversation where she said to me, "Di, are you being the type of man you'd want your daughters to marry?" That question just rocked my world. Like it was the craziest thing, Josh. Like it was like looking in that mirror again. Remember the mirror when I'm 14, yeah. Right? But now my wife was the mirror, forcing me to look at who I was in that moment. And wow. I started thinking like, you know what, if a guy like me at that time showed up on my doorstep wanting to take my daughters out, you know, of course, under the age of 6, it wouldn't happen. But I'm just like, even look at my daughters now, 18 and 16. If a man like that showed up wanting to get to know them, I'd be like, hell no. No, there's no way. Right. But that's who I was role modeling. That's who I was acting as. I was their first impression of what a man should be. And here I am living this life and showing them something completely like out of character for me, at least who I believe. And so in that moment, I said, you know what? I'm going to go 1 year without drinking. 1 year. Interesting to note. And this is the weird thing, right? Because all of a sudden I realized, wow, alcohol had become quite a powerful crutch in my life. It helped me function. It helped me cope with things. Like it helped me just get through the day.
Right.
And you take away the crutches and you've got a leg that's hurt and not fully healed, you know, you're playing injured. Yeah. Well, you learn pretty quick that, geez, I got to do something to rehab this leg. I got to learn how to walk again before I can run.
Yeah.
And I realized I did not have the mental capacity nor the resources of what to do again. So I felt like that 14-year-old kid again, like, geez, I know I got to make a change, but I have no idea how to do it. I don't know what, like, you know, fear sets in.
Right.
And that's when I realized I need help. Yeah, you know, I need some support. I need someone to guide me. And I'm not afraid to talk about this. You know, I found a psychologist. I worked with him for 3-4 months. I found a relationship counselor that started with my wife and I, but we ended up determining that, you know, my wife's good. She's very good at communicating. I need some work. And so right. I started working with her and I just started to focus on the internal work, learning new skills to communicate how I feel, to communicate what I'm thinking, to be a better communicator, to better understand, you know, how to cope with some of these challenges that I was experiencing and not deal with it in an unhealthy way.
Right.
And so after that year, I realized, you know, it was funny because we were like, oh yeah, so we'll share some wine when we get to the year. And I was like, I have no desire. I've grown so much in that 1 year. I want to keep growing. Wow. And so now it's like over 11 years, you know, like, substance free and just living life. And again, I don't use the term addicted. I don't use the term alcoholic. Because I never felt like that was my issue. I never felt like I was without control. I was always aware of my decision. Always.
Yeah, right.
I just chose to value alcohol and how it made me feel over my family and over other things that mattered in my life. And so that's really what happened, you know? Now it's branched off into, because I wanted to have deeper relationships with other men. I realized that all my male relationships were very superficial. Anytime I'd meet a new guy, I would instantly go into judgment mode, size him up. I think of him as a competitor. I'm like, I can't be honest with you. I can't be vulnerable because you'll see it as a weakness. You'll use it against me.
Right.
You know, this is what was going on in my mind. And I'm like, this is not a healthy way. There's so many great men out there and I want to get to know them.
You're right.
And so that's when we started Mentorship Mondays. Me and the co-founder, Nick Wood, who I mentioned in the TED Talk, you know, we got together and started hosting weekly gatherings for men to come together, have dinner and conversation. No hidden agenda, no alcohol, no drugs, no drama. Literally just coming together to authentically get to know each other and to share. And as soon as we started doing that, it was crazy. Started realizing that you start being vulnerable with another guy and that guy's not there. He's only there because he wants to connect and understand.
Yeah.
Like you start realizing that everybody's like, oh man, I got that same issue. Oh, I had that problem. You know, like we're all dealing with the exact same crap.
Yeah.
But we never talk about it. You know?
So
we're left there feeling like we're so alone and that no one will understand us. It's just because we don't talk about it and we don't ever allow anybody to let us know that they get us. And so that was a big thing. And that's been the thing that's been most recent for me these last couple of years is really embracing these new relationships that I've been forming with some amazing people around the world because of this weekly gathering. And so we continue to facilitate that. That brings you up to speed. Now we're here right now.
And now we're here. In your TED Talk, which I really want people to listen to it because it's very important. And vulnerability is what this podcast is built on. Mm. And both moments in your journey, you being vulnerable to your dad at a very young age and telling him, I don't like the way I feel. I don't like the way I look. I need your help. Right.
Yeah.
Then, you know, being vulnerable with you and your wife in that moment, you guys are being very vulnerable with each other. Right. And so in these moments, you needed to be vulnerable to get help. Now you get an opportunity to be vulnerable to tell your story so that you can help others.
Yes.
And so that's what makes vulnerability so powerful in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love hearing people's stories. And so in a little bit of your TED Talk, you talk about how, you know, vulnerability is not a woman thing. It's not a man thing. It's a human thing. Why is it a human thing?
Well, it's, you know, if you think about vulnerability, I honestly feel that vulnerability is a skill like anything else, you know, it's a skill and we either learn to embrace it and practice it. So it becomes something that's more comfortable. And I like to, you know, place some filters in there. I think Brené Brown's really good at framing this. You know, she's clearly a champion of vulnerability. But she talks about vulnerability not being something to create shock and awe. You know, we're not saying being vulnerable for the sake of saying, hey, look at me. You know, it's not like this, whoa, like trying to create a bit of a, like that's not the point. If that's why you're being vulnerable, that's very inauthentic. You know, there's an intention that's not necessarily about growth and about connection. It's something completely different. Again, I would say it's a bit more ego centric, right? Like it's more ego focused. It's like, hey, look at me. I'm being vulnerable. Look at me. And that's why I feel it's a sensitive conversation these days, because there is a lot of people say, hey, be vulnerable. But I wonder why You know, like what's being gained by being vulnerable right now? And that's why I think it's kind of a fine dance. And that's why I think it's such a valid conversation to be having right now,
right?
Online, offline, through our families, through our communities. When I think about vulnerability, it's a human quality though. It's not a man thing. It's not a woman thing. Cause when I started to have conversations with my peers and through my audiences online, I started asking, like, when you hear about vulnerability in men, what do you think? And the craziest thing was, and this is the research I was doing before the TED talk, just to gather more information from just people. And I had a lot of women say they find it a very sexy quality in a man to be vulnerable, to be honest. I had a couple of women say, oh, I don't like weak men. Like instantly they thought vulnerability, they thought
was weak.
Yes. But also vice versa, men, same sort of responses. I had some people that were like, yeah, vulnerability is a sign of strength. You know, it's a sign of, it's an ability to lead by an example and to be okay with some of those areas that we recognize we want to change. You know, so there was some really well thought out responses, but then there was also some guys that are like, no, weakness. It'll be used against me. I can't be vulnerable with people. No, like, you know, so it was a very mixed review, very mixed. And when I was doing the practicing, we had a gentleman that also spoke on the stage at the event that I was a part of. And he represents as non-gender, right? Like not non-binary. So that, you know, I've only known a few people so far in my life that relate that way, right? Like that identify as non-binary. So I know of a lot of people, but I hadn't actually known anybody personally to have a conversation. And he gave me some feedback on my very first draft of my talk.
Wow. And
he brought up some really valid things that helped me think. There was also a girl, excuse me, a 15-year-old girl that did a talk as well about reducing the voting age in Canada from 18 to 15. She's like, I want to be able to vote, you know? And so she did a beautiful talk on that. She also gave me feedback because, you know, from a 15-year-old perspective, from a gentleman of Asian descent, non-binary, it just gave me feedback because I was coming from just a male perspective originally in my talk.
Wow.
And I realized that I am very one-sided in how I'm presenting this because I was talking about my perspective, but I was like, you know what? It's not just about me and it's not just about my journey because a lot of people are having a similar journey or want to embark on a similar journey. So it made me start looking at the language that I use. And I realized that, you know, vulnerability is definitely not a male thing. It's not a female thing. It's not a non-binary thing. It is a human thing. It's something that we're all doing all the time. You know, we're humans. Yeah. We're not emotional. We're not humans being emotional. We're actually emotional human beings. I say that in the talk and I mean it, you know, like that's who we are. So that's sort of where that came from, you know, and I'm not trying to say it's any gender attached to it. It is just, it's a human quality, you know?
Right.
And I think our relationship with how we understand vulnerability and how it shows up for us, that's where the conversation really starts to take traction and where I feel it needs to go. So, you know, I'm just happy that we're having this conversation right now. It'd be interesting to hear what your listeners think and the people that are viewing this. Like, because I think there's so many differing opinions and I'm not saying any one of them is wrong. I just think we have to get to an inclusive understanding and maybe we have to shift the definition a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So that's sort of where the vulnerability conversation goes.
No, that's amazing. That's so amazing. It's just great that you got that experience to from both of them, two different people.
Yeah.
All humans getting the opportunity to say, hey, this is what this means to me. And you getting feedback. So that's amazing. That's amazing. So with that being said, where can people find you? What I'm going to do, I'm going to link the TED talk in the footnotes for sure. And all your information, but we'd love to hear where can people find you and continue to follow your journey.
Well, thank you, Josh. I have my website, daimanuel.com. So daimanuel.com. And there's almost 1,800 articles on there now. Like I told you, I've been blogging and creating content for 14 years. All right.
Wow.
So I'm totally dating myself. It's like I'm OG when it comes to blogging. And it is... And when I say OG, I mean old guy. So I just want to qualify that for people that are listening. I'm the old guy. And it's funny, in my spheres, I am the old guy. And I feel it at times. But where I'm going with this is on that blog, I've just put all the resources that I can. So obviously in my last 14 years, and in particular the last 11, I've had a lot of growth opportunities, like just things that have really challenged who I am, how I look at things, how I interact with things. And so as I'm going through a lot of these growth moments, I tend to write about it. And not necessarily from a personal perspective, but from a general perspective. That way it can be more applicable to everyone. I might share my personal story here and there, but it's really just trying to open the door for people that, hey, maybe there's other things I can be doing to continue my growth as a person, as a human, right? Yeah. And so there's lots of content, lots of free resources there. And if you want to have a conversation, you can send me a message from the website, or I'm most active on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. My handle is just my name. Like, that's the one thing about having a unique name. I've like every platform I'm on is just my name. So I'm really easy to get a hold of.
Right.
And I invite people, have a conversation with me. Say, I heard you on Josh's podcast. I love what you had to say about vulnerability. This is how vulnerability shows up in my life. Like, that's great. Let's have a conversation. But that's the easiest way to get a hold of me right now.
I love it. Dye, man, I appreciate you being vulnerable. Appreciate you being fun.
Thank you.
Like you said, a roof of fun.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. I'm paying attention. So no, oh, I appreciate. I appreciate you giving your time and giving a great message. This is a fun one. I know a lot of people can relate to it, and I know a lot of people take some value from it as well. So I appreciate you.
Thank you, Josh. Listen, man, I absolutely love what you're doing, and you know, this is the interesting thing about vulnerability. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of trust.
Yeah.
In the process of being vulnerable, but trust in who you're being vulnerable with as well, right? Like not everybody deserves our vulnerability. And I want people to understand this, but you create a space, and what you've been today, you've made being vulnerable. And I hate to say easy, because it's, I don't think there's anything easy about it, but you've made it easier for me to just open up. You've created a safe space, but I also know you're authentically, you're there. Like you're truly, you create a great space because of your energy, and you're willing to open it for people to be vulnerable. So I just want to commend you for that, because being vulnerable is not easy, and it takes two, right? Like we're just vulnerable with ourselves. That's fine, but nobody has to know, right? It's again,
100%.
So I just want to say thank you. You know, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you better.
Appreciate it. With that being said, we are out, but man, can't wait for you guys to listen to it.
Our brand design and strategy is by Tessa at 5footstudios.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at 5footstudios. Our music is by Lakey Inspired. Go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and click the 5 stars to give us a rating. And most importantly, keep playing Injured.